Hey, welcome to the program. What are you doing here? I just walked into the room and you were sitting here waiting for me to do the show. That's pretty cool. That usually doesn't happen. All right, fine, here we go.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Anybody see my pants?
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you very much. You know, you really should be ashamed of yourself. Anyway, boy, speaking of being ashamed of yourself, the news yesterday was just, the news every day is just a potpourri of confusion and crap. Yesterday at the White House, there was an event taking place in the Rose Garden. President was entertaining the EU, the European Foundation of whatever. Caitlin Collins is a reporter for CNN. She doesn't represent CNN in these situations. She's what's called a pool reporter. A pool reporter lets you know how much chlorine is in the pool. No, that's not true. A pool reporter ask general questions for other news outlets as well. Apparently, her name is Caitlin Collins. Apparently, she asked questions that the president didn't want to answer at a previous event. She shouted out a question asking about what happened behind closed doors with Putin. The president did not answer that. And walked out of the room. Apparently his response was, thank you very much for your questions, and walked out, didn't respond to that one. Come to find out that yesterday, this Rose Garden event, this reporter, Caitlin Collins, just before the event, she was called into an office at the White House, and they said, Ms. Collins, you cannot attend the White House event. She says, why? Is because you, at a previous event, you shouted out a question and the president didn't appreciate that, so you are not allowed to attend. This is considerable. This is actually the president deciding that in a retaliatory manner to punish people for asking questions that could embarrass him. This is not the way this country is supposed to run. This is the beginning, actually we're already deep into it, but this is the beginning of a regime that if you criticize it or make it angry, it will retaliate against you. So don't you dare say anything against the leader. That's been going on for a while because the leader, this being Trump, is very famous for putting people down, trying to destroy their reputations, spewing lies about them in order to knock them down to size. He's been doing this forever, certainly during the campaign and certainly after he was president. And now he's getting a little deeper into it, where he is disinviting certain members of the press because he doesn't like the kinds of questions that they ask. It's significant. The The White House took retaliatory action against Kristen Collins, a White House reporter for CNN, after Collins asked President Trump questions at an Oval Office photo op on Wednesday. CNN, rival networks, and the White House Correspondents Association all spoke out against the administration's action. On Wednesday afternoon, Collins was representing all the television networks as the pool reporter in the room during a meeting between Trump and Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the European Commission. As is customary, Collins lobbed a few questions at the president. She asked about Vladimir Putin and Michael Cohen. Trump did not answer the questions. Later in the afternoon, the White House surprised the press corps by announcing a press availability with Trump and Juncker in the Rose Garden. It was said to be open to all press, not just the small pool. We're talking about the big pools. A few minutes later, Collins was asked to come to Bill Shine's office. Shine, a former co-president of Fox News, he's also the new deputy chief of staff for communications. Shine and Press Secretary Sarah Sanders met Collins in that office. Collins said she was asked not to go to this press conference. Collins said she reacted by saying, "You're banning me from an event because you didn't like the questions I asked?" Collins said Shine and Sanders asserted that, "We're not banning your network. Your photographers can still come. Your producers can still come. But you are not invited to the Rose Garden today." In a statement response to press inquiries, Sanders confirmed this disinvitation. She claimed that Collins shouted questions and refused to leave despite repeatedly being asked to do so during the prior event. "To be clear," Sanders said, we support a free press and ask that everyone be respectful of the presidency and guests at the White House." No, Sanders, what you said, or what you meant to say, certainly, was don't ask questions that ticks off the president. Otherwise, he'll disinvite you from things and you won't be able to ask questions. This is a retaliation. It's inappropriate. It's wrong. It's weak. And it's just a great indication of how this president, quote unquote, wants to lead by intimidation, to the point where if you cross him, you will be removed. This, I mean, I don't want to go there, but this is unheard of and ballsy. And it is an insult and slap to democracy. This reporter Collins was not out of line. She was not shouting indiscriminately. She simply asked a question. All pool reporters have to shout out questions because that's the only way that they can get recognized to ask their question. And when she was recognized, she asked the question. And that was it. She was not asked to leave because she was violent or unruly. She was asked to leave because she asked a question that may have embarrassed the president. I don't know how anybody can stand for this, no matter what party you're connected to. I've said this so many times before on this show, but I'll say it again because it's easier to say than to play the tape. This has gone too far. And it really shouldn't have anything to do whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. It should not have anything to do with your political views. You can't hang your hat on a guy that is destroying democracy as we know it and our standing in the world. You cannot support a man, quote unquote again, who has a fascination, a love, and desire to be a dictator, who coddles up to dictators, calls them extraordinary leaders, powerful people, effective leaders. He cozies up to them. And yet our friends in countries that we've had as allies for decades and decades and decades, he attacks them. It's so obvious it's not funny. But some people cling to this man because he changes policies here and there. You're selling your soul to the devil is what you're doing, because the decency and respect of this country and its image throughout the world has already been tainted. And another 2 years of this, it could be destroyed. We still don't know what happened behind closed doors with Kim Jong-un, and certainly not with Vladimir Putin. There have been no full disclosures, reports, discussions, reporting to the American people as to what took place in that closed-door meeting for 2 hours between Putin, a dictator, and President Trump, a dictator wannabe. We as the American people have a right to know what you're doing with our country, and to answer the question by saying, you'll see, we'll take care of it, is not really sufficient at all. Okay, I'm done. I mean, in so many ways, I'm done. So many ways. Anyway, I hope you don't mind what I said. All right, don't be too... Look, I have rules and regulations because my show is not a democracy. Here's what they are.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
All right. don't ever do what I do at home. I shouldn't even do what I do at home, but I do at home and here. Okay, we'll be right back after this.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
Our guest later on in the program is a significant guest. Here's what he does, which is fascinating. He's a consultant to businesses. About money? No. About marketing? No. So what does he consult with businesses about, Ron? Well, okay, get huffy with me. He alerts businesses about active shooter situations.
What?
Yeah. This country has changed, ladies and gentlemen. Our schools are no longer safe necessarily. They are right now because there's no school. But when there is school, there's that thing in the back of everybody's mind with the realization that the most horrible invasion into a school by terrorists or just by a disgruntled employee could take place. So many schools across the country are starting to prepare and do drills just in case that active shooter situation takes place. But what about your place of business? What about your place of work? Now, there was always the possibility that if you ran a store, that somebody could come into your store and threaten you and take money out of your cash register and run out with your money. That's always been a threat. As soon as the public is admitted into an establishment, that's always a possibility, especially these days with drugs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, people get desperate and they do desperate things. But what about your private office where it's not open to the public and you may have a disgruntled employee who is unhappy with their boss or their superior, and they happen to own guns or acquire them? What would happen if an angry, pissed off person walked into your office, your place of business, and became an active shooter? Well, offices don't usually plan for stuff like that. Don't usually. Why, my God, they never do. There have been some examples during the prior years of these horrific situations taking place in places of business. So what do you do? Well, that's where this guy comes in. He actually has steps to thwart these situations, or if these situations do arise, how do you handle yourself in that situation? So I thought it would be very interesting to talk to him, and we're going to do so very shortly on this program. So grab yourself a cup of coffee and a cigarette and enjoy that one, huh? Don't see a lot of people smoking anymore, do you? When I was growing up, everybody smoked. Everybody. If you didn't smoke, you were considered to be, what's wrong with you? Don't you want to kill yourself? Everybody smoked. Everybody smoked. And a lot of it was peer pressure. If your friends smoke and you're the only one that doesn't, eventually you're going to feel like I'm left out of the smoking deal here. It was peer pressure. There's a lot of peers involved. People did enjoy cigarettes. They are addictive, obviously, with the nicotine and all that kind of crap. Not many people smoke anymore. And if you do smoke, you're banned. You're banished like a Rose Garden presidential event. You are banned. You have to stand outside, whether it's freezing cold outside, 10-degree weather, snowstorm, hurricane, whatever the case may be, you must go outside to smoke. It is illegal to smoke indoors because it could bother other people. Let's take that further. Maybe we should start banning stupid people because stupid people start bothering other people. Stupid people bother me. Why can't they just go outside? If you're going to be stupid and moronic, you need to go outside. You can't do it in a room with me. That's illegal. You're infringing upon my health, my mental health. If you're going to be an asshole, you have to go outside. I don't know why that isn't a rule. Anyway, so that gentleman will be joining us a little bit later on in the show. How are you, by the way? I'm sorry, all I'm doing is talking about myself. I sometimes forget that you're here listening to this, and I should be offering you more stuff, like free prizes and giveaways. Let's do a giveaway right now. Are you ready? Here we go. This is going to be extremely important. You could win a house, a car, a boat, or absolutely nothing. And you know what's going to happen. You're going to win absolutely nothing. And that's pretty much how they run the lottery. We do our show out of Massachusetts. Massachusetts, a wonderful place to live. I don't mind it. My definition of a wonderful place to live is I don't mind it. It's true, though. Massachusetts is very proud of the fact that they have one of the most successful lotteries in the entire country. At one time, it was the most successful lottery in the entire country. So, Massachusetts was actually proud of the fact that it's making people gamble and take all their hard-earned money and throw it away in the lottery, and this is something Massachusetts was proud of. Well, I suggest you be quiet about that one. That's something you shout from the highest hill. Hey, everybody, congratulate us. We're ripping off our own citizens. It's gambling, kids. It's gambling. The funniest thing to me, and it's not funny, but it's funny. There's a thing called Keno. I don't know if you have it where you live. I have no idea where you're living. People listen to this show all over the world. I don't know why. Actually, we have a very high listenership in Sweden, Finland, and United Kingdom, and I have no idea why. I have no idea why. But our numbers come in. The great thing about doing these podcast syndication things is we actually get numbers as to how many people are listening in various locations and how they're listening, whether it's on a smartphone or through Google or Apple, that kind of thing. So we actually get numbers, and it is a high concentration of listeners in England, Sweden and Finland. And I why? why? Anyway, I have no idea what I'm talking about now. I totally lost it. Okay, anyway, man, does that happen to you every once in a while? You're talking about something, you go off on a tangent, and then you have no idea what you were previously talking about. None whatsoever. And then you say to yourself, I must be getting old. My short-term memory is totally shot. And then you think back to your younger days, and you realize, I never had a short-term memory. I never had one. I just something I didn't get. I know you feel the same way I do. Anyway, no, I was talking about the lottery. And it's stupid. I mean, if I were to give away a prize, you certainly would not win it. There's no reason why you would. Because the odds are against you. The odds are like 1 out of 65 billion. So they have this thing called the lottery, and you're probably familiar with it. And you take your hard-earned money, and you go through this fantasy process where, wow, if I won the $50 million, that could actually happen. It could, but it won't. They have a thing called scratch tickets. You'd spend a dollar or two. They give you a card. You scratch off the film on it, and you find out if you won or not. And here's the stupid part. You've spent $2 to buy this silly scratch ticket. You scratch it. You win a dollar. And you celebrate. Oh, I'm a winner. No, you're a loser. You lost a dollar still. Or maybe the scratch ticket was free and you're back to square one. You're not a winner. That's not a winner. That's getting your money back. But you're not a winner. You didn't win anything. Some people, they go crazy with scratch tickets. Oh, look, I won $20. Okay, how much have you spent on scratch tickets that you lost? Well, you lost all this. Well, I guess I spent about like $500-$600. Oh, great! But celebrate the fact that you won 20. So now you've only lost $580. I mean, it's amazing how our human minds justify these incredible stupidities that we go through. But we all have this feeling of hope. Well, I did before Trump was president. But we all have this feeling of hope where. Just maybe. There's a thing called Mega Millions. That's one of the lottery tickets around where I live. And it's $2 a ticket. And the jackpot was up to something like 50, 100, 500 million. I have no idea what it was. Doesn't really matter because I'm not going to win anyway. And I didn't. So I go into a convenience store. And by the way, convenience stores should really change their name. They're not all that convenient, I found. So I walk in there and I say, please give me two quick picks, because I'm too stupid to pick my own numbers. Not that that would work anyway. Everybody's number has their birthday in it, or the age of their mother, or something like that. So everybody's got the same numbers. You know. Nobody picks like 65 and 88 and that kind of thing, because nobody does that, because it doesn't have any, you know, I guess if you're 88 years old, you might pick it. I have no idea. But every number has to have some significance. Otherwise, this is all crazy. Yeah, right. So I do this. I buy two tickets, $4, you know, both of them lost. But when I'm buying it, the girl behind the counter there at the convenience store, she says, I hope you win. And I said, excuse me? I said, yeah, I hope you win. That would, we haven't had a winner out of this store in the longest time. And that would be great if you won. So I'm pulling for you. You got a winner, sir. I know you do. And I walked out of the store and I actually, this is how gullible we are. And we're gullible. Oh, the human race is very gullible. We are poster children for the word gullible. So I'm walking out of the store and I'm saying to myself, wow, this could be a special lottery ticket. She actually blessed me. The woman behind the counter at the convenience store making less than minimum wage just told me she hopes I win. Well, if that isn't a lucky charm, I don't know what is. All right, fine. It's crazy stuff. What the hell's going on with us these days? What the hell is going on? All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to speak to this gentleman about how to handle an active shooter that may walk into your business. It's possible. It's more possible that could happen than you winning the lottery, by the way.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or, like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Falkenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Falkenhalter. It's beer.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Jason Bryant is an active shooter training expert. Wow. Yeah, in the news, we've been seeing a lot of incidents where active shooters go into public places, including offices and companies, and create quite a cataclysmic stir. Is this something that's always been going on and we just are talking about it more, or is it indeed escalating?
It's escalating. Studies have shown that the frequency is becoming more and more often as time goes by. Really, the first one that really changed the paradigm was Columbine.
Yeah.
And since then, they've been picking up speed. Columbine wasn't the first one. There was one at University of Texas in 1966. But Columbine's the one that sort of started this current trend.
Yeah. What's the exact definition of an active shooter, I mean, as far as incident is concerned?
So the way the FBI looks like active shooter is they define it as somebody who's going into a public space to try and kill as many people as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So it's basically mass murder, what we're talking about. And what they take away from active shooter is it's not a gangland violence-type shooting, mm-hmm. or domestic violence, murder, suicide, or a robbery gone wrong. It's somebody who's going out into the public specifically with the goal of committing mass murder.
I see some data here that the shooter commits suicide 40% of the time. Law enforcement engages a shooter with gunfire 28% of the time, which is not a lot. Unarmed citizens successfully restrain the shooter 13%. Armed citizens exchange gunfire with the shooter as low as 3%, which is almost non-existent. I mean, there's quite a bit of data to say that when an active shooter situation is in process, we're screwed.
Well, I wouldn't look at it that way. the average police response in the United States for an active shooter is 3 minutes. Uh-huh. So it's 180 seconds. So what you do in those 180 seconds absolutely matters.
A lot.
And I think can change the outcome.
Yeah. Well, by the time it's reported, it's already in progress and has already actually happened. So are businesses targeted a lot? I mean, we talked about Columbine, and we had a situation in a movie theater in Denver. But businesses, you get a lot of disgruntled people.
For sure. About 46% of these events happen in what we would call a place of commerce,
wow.
some sort of business.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, that's a wide variety. So you could look at the Pulse nightclub in 2016. That's a business. You could look at the Las Vegas shooting during the Las Vegas concert.
Yeah.
That's a business.
Sort of.
So San Bernardino, that was a business conference,
sure.
a business meeting that
yeah.
was attacked.
Yeah. Does this happen more frequently than we're even aware of?
Absolutely. It's happening at a much more significant rate. Like last year, we had 27 active shooter events, and you don't hear about 27 events on the news.
Right.
A lot of them, somebody goes out with the intent to commit a mass murder, and they're subdued by their would-be victims, or they only, and I don't I say this, you know, cautiously, they only kill one or two people, so
right.
it doesn't make
right.
national
right.
news.
Right.
But that was, their intent.
Yeah. And usually when people commit this, it's not I'm going to do it and get away with it. It's a pretty much is this person is not in their right mind, and the rules just don't apply to them at all.
Exactly. And most of them, you know, they have some sort of burning grievance against society, and this is their last act against society.
Right.
A lot of them actually, when you threw out the suicide statistic, a lot of them actually commit suicide on the very first contact from police. As soon as they realize that the police are on scene, that's when they commit suicide, because they're not interested in any sort of conflict or being arrested.
Well, we certainly now are aware of the problem and some of that data about it. Now the question is, what do we do about it? And in your professional capacity as an active shooter training expert, I guess that's where you come in to try to teach us how to handle this. Avoid, deny, and defend. What is that?
Okay, so avoid, deny, defend is the plan put out by the Alert Center, which is something that it's a law enforcement training center that partnered with Texas State University, and that's their three-step plan for dealing with active shooters. Department of Homeland Security also has one called Run, Hide, Fight. It's synonymous. The idea is that, you know, of the three steps, the first one, you want to evade and get away from the shooter at any cost. Like, any way you can escape is better. The further you are from the shooter, the safer you're going to be.
Right.
The second step, where they talk about deny or hide, basically what we're talking about is sheltering or barricading in place, finding a solid office that you can hide in with a commercial-grade locked door, steel frame door, solid wood core, commercial-grade lock. That's a very safe place to hide. And then the last step is, you know, the defend, or what Homeland Security would call fight. It's basically, it's a counterattack. If you happen to be in the space where the shooting actually starts and you don't have the opportunity to get away or to shelter in place, then you have to actually fight back and counterattack. A good example of that would be like the church in Sutherland Springs in Texas. That's a one-room building. Yeah. So in that room where the shooting started, their only option was to fight back.
Right.
Another good example would be the American servicemen on the train in France. They're caught in a moving train, and so they counterattacked immediately and were able to do that shooting.
Yeah. I know that in many schools, they actually train for a possible circumstance such as this. I'm not aware the companies actually are proactive.
So there's a lot of companies that are, and they're looking for a source for training. Mm-hmm. They're looking for an avenue for training, which is what we're doing here with Alert Find and ActiveShooterAssessment.com, is that the companies can go to that website, do an assessment of their company's readiness plan, and then get tips and training on how to improve on that.
Yeah. It's almost like, I mean, you have a security system so no one will break into your place overnight. You have a security system on your computer so no one will hack you, but yet businesses physically, sometimes the doors just open and anybody can walk in, and if something does occur, they don't have a plan. I guess it's denial, like it can happen to other people, but there's no reason it would happen to us. But that's where you would come in, where this actually can be prepared.
Absolutely. So it's not only important, like what we mentioned, the first 180 seconds, what you do in those 180 seconds, but it's important what you do in the weeks and the months ahead of that. The preparation allows you, your target to not be what we would call a soft target, and that makes your business less desirable to attack in the first place.
Is there some way if someone wants to attack a business, they don't care because they're going to commit suicide anyway, most of the time, not all of the time. But is there something that would warn a somewhat sane individual to not even try this?
Yes. Okay, so statistically, about 60% of these active shooters have some sort of connection to the facility that they're attacking.
Yes.
So if a business is very proactive in making their plan, and they've gotten their pre-designated interior shelters set, and they've practiced their active shooter drills, and they've all made a pact to each other that they're going to fight back if they're in the space where the attack happens, then somebody who has a connection to that business, let's say one of their employees is thinking about doing an active shooter, he's going to realize this isn't the business. This isn't the place I want to attack.
Yeah.
All of these guys pre-plan their attacks, and they do target analysis.
Yes,
so they're looking for
yes.
the softest target.
Yes. Are you an advocate of owning weapons in a company facility for this possible purpose?
So that's a case-by-case basis.
Uh-huh.
You know, every community has a different sort of a different outlook on whether or not their employees should be armed or not. And I think
right.
a lot of that depends on what type of business they have.
Mm-hmm.
So that question's pretty broad, and I would yeah. have to tailor the answer specifically
right.
on a case-by-case basis.
Right. That's understandable. So what is your advice? I assume that there are many companies and many people work in companies that have been concerned about this, yet their management hasn't done anything about it. What do you say to companies that haven't done much of anything about this, figuring that, well, probably won't happen to them?
Well, if I was the employees, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I would
yeah.
complain to management, hey, we need to do this. I would send them the link to ActiveShooterAssessment.com.
Good.
Say, can we take this assessment? Can we get this training?
Yeah.
And I would just be very proactive about it.
Very good. Okay, so one more time where people can do this.
It's called ActiveShooterAssessment.com.
Okay.
And they can log on and do an assessment, and it'll test the readiness of their organization.
Good. Yeah, always better to think about this before something happens, because in this situation, sometimes there is no after. So it's
absolutely
this is a whole different deal. At least with a cyber attack, you can walk away and figure this out. You can't walk away with this one sometimes. All right, thank you, Jason, so much
absolutely.
For your time today.
You're very welcome.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.
Well. That'll do it for me today, certainly. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. I hope you join me then. Anything can happen, and it usually does. I don't know if that's good or not. Hey, all I ask you is one thing. Just take care of yourself. Keep your eyes open. Stay informed. And I wish you peace.